Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the Full Scale Outdoors Podcast. I am Dale Luganbill. Before we get to today's episode, I'm going to tell you about TheBeardStruggle.com. TheBeardStruggle.com has amazing beard products that turned a guy, me, to somebody who never dreamt of using beard products. I mean, that sounds like something somebody with skinny jeans that drinks White Claw would use. I, however, do not wear skinny jeans, and I don't drink White Claw, but I do, however, am very thankful that I stumbled upon TheBeardStruggle.com because their beard products rock, dude. They're awesome. They make my beard manageable. It's nice and soft. It doesn't get wiry and coarse. It's great. To the fact that, I know you've heard me talking about it week in, week out, but I usually have shaved it off by this time because a beard in the summer just does not sound like fun. But with these products, it's really not a bad deal. It's filled in nice. My beard's never looked better, never felt better. Not sure I'm going to do the shave thing. It's a daily struggle. It's a beard struggle. Wow. Anyways, so check it out. If you have a beard, think about growing a beard, you want to make your beard better, check out TheBeardStruggle.com. Use code FULLSCALE15 at checkout to save yourself 15%. All right, everybody. My guest today, super excited about this one. I wish we would have had more time. I could have talked this dude for forever, but he is super busy. You probably know him. He's Matt Johnson. He's with Clam. He's a guide. He's a promoter. He's got articles and magazine and TV shows. And I mean, he's doing it all. So the fact that he could carve out a few minutes for me was awesome, and I'm super appreciative of it. He's a wealth of knowledge. Great dude. Well, I don't know what more there is to say about it. Hopefully we can continue to do these in the future. Yeah, it's awesome. Oh, he owns and runs the UPL, the Upper Panfish League. So it's like the, you know, just like the Minnesota Made Tournament, very similar. And I don't know, it's just awesome. Had a great time. I was just kind of longing for more, which is good. Keep him coming back for more. Keep me coming back for more. So anyways, here we go. This is the Full Scale Outdoors Podcast with Matt Johnson.
Oh, here we go, boys.
Go.
Ooh, I love that sound. This is a good one.
I'm ready to rock, brother.
Sweet. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you coming on the Full Scale Outdoors Podcast.
Absolutely.
Pretty awesome. Let's get a little bit of backstory on Matt. I've seen your face in magazine. I've seen your face on TV, all over the internet for a long time. So it's like you've just been like one of those. I'm giving you like my perspective of it. It's like you've just been one of those personalities that has kind of like always been there. So I mean, like, how did you get started in the outdoor industry?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've always had a strong passion for fishing, and to be honest, I don't really know why, because we never grew up with a fishing boat. We didn't have a lake home or a cabin. We didn't go on fishing trips. My dad and my brother and I would just do some shore fishing just a few times a year. But I just, from a young age, fishing was a major passion of mine. I'd get really obsessed whenever we talk about going. And it just kind of blossomed into high school, where I really focused on fishing, read every In Fisherman magazine, watched every TV show. I was that kid that would sit in front of the TV on a Saturday morning knowing that at 7:30, you know, In Fisherman television was going to be on.
Been there.
And obviously this was before you could TiVo anything, or the internet never existed. So you had to be there at your TV at 7:30, watched all that and became obsessed. And then as I got into high school and had obviously more freedom and liberty to do things, I got really obsessed. I started writing, joining some of the, when I was later years in high school, joining some of the online fishing forums. And then when I went to college, I made a conscious effort that I wasn't going to work at, you know, a Kohl's or a McDonald's to pay my bills. I was going to be a fishing guide. So locked ties with Crestliner boats and started guiding once I went to college to make ends meet down in Mankato. And the addiction became an obsession. And all through college, I guided and started picking up partnerships and sponsorships and doing seminars and working sports shows, and started the UPL in 2002 when I was a, you know, freshman in college, and the rest was history. And it's just blossomed into one heck of a fun career, and worked for Thorn Brothers for many years and still guide to this day. And now obviously, you know, I work for Clam Outdoors and manage all pro staff and for four different brands, 620 pros in four countries and almost every state in the United States now. And it's been one heck of a fun ride, and I hope it never stops as long as I can do it.
You messed around and went and made a career out of it.
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, what people need to realize in this business, and it is a business to a lot of people for sure, and it can definitely be a hobby as well, but if you want it to be a business or a career, you have to work hard at it. And I don't want to sound cliche, because that's something you should say about any business, right? You've got to work hard, but fishing especially, because it's so competitive, and you have to drop the sense of entitlement, because right now we live in an era where so many people have a Facebook page and think they should be sponsored or fish one fishing tournament and do well and think they should be sponsored, and it's just not the reality of it. It's, you know, when I came up the ranks, and some of the guys my age that started when I did, we'd laugh once in a while. We used to have to do things for free. It's a novel idea.
Yeah.
And no one understands that concept, it seems like, nowadays. But we used to do a lot of things and not get paid or compensated for it. And I think the people that understand that and have that drive are truly the ones that are making that next level move.
Well, you need to treat it as like an apprenticeship almost, you know, the times where, you know,
spot
you
on.
Do something
you're
that's not on. Being paid. It's like, well, yeah, you're not getting paid monetarily, but your effort is being rewarded, or at least noticed and acknowledged, hopefully, by
Amen.
Somebody, you know,
yep.
And there's definitely value on. In that for sure.
Yeah. And being a pro staff director for my full-time job, I see it. And that's the stuff that catches my eye. It's pretty fun to watch, but no, it's been a labor of love. I love it. I still love it. I have kids that I'm raising now, my wife and I, that love it and want to be involved in the industry and see some of that stuff. I've been blessed and, you know, sometimes right place, right time, obviously. Been a lot of fun. Fished my way through college and took the guide path and the retail path, and it led me to where I am now. And I encourage anyone that wants to be involved in fishing, the business, at least spend some time in a retail establishment.
Oh, for
because
sure.
Because it will dial you in ways that you will never understand. And so, I mean, I firmly believe I'm where I'm at today because of cutting my teeth at Thorn Brothers and working retail and working with customers and seeing that level of pace. And that side of the business makes you a stronger ambassador for the sport. So I would encourage people to, you know, try their hand at a retail. If you're concerned where you want to be and what you want to do, work a retail store, and you'll see a lot of things open up for you.
Well, I mean, talk about a foot in the door. And that leads me, like what you said about right place, right time. You know, a lot of people are going to hear that, and they're going to say, oh, he got lucky, or I just got to, you know, I'm just going to fish on the weekends and wait till I meet the right person and, you know,
yeah,
hopefully I can get lucky. It's like, well, yeah, right place, right time, but you were working your butt off to make sure that you were in the right place at the right time. You know,
oh,
a lot of these pro anglers, you know, I've heard Iaconelli say it. He's like, you have to put yourself in a position to win. You know, you have to put yourself in a position to get lucky. You know, even in the, you know, you're a tournament angler, and I've fished the ice fishing tournament scene with Minnesota Made, and, you know, you ask people, you know, they interview you, and you get, you know, what's your secret to success, or what do you think works, or how much luck do you think is involved in these things? And it's like, well, you can't say that luck isn't a factor. I mean, kind of going right down a rabbit hole here with the tournament fishing, but it's not just like you have to do everything you can in your power. Have
oh,
all
for
your,
sure,
you know, knots tied correctly. Your equipment needs to be working in perfect order. So when you get that lucky bite, in air quotes, you can take advantage of it. Otherwise, it's a missed
right
fish, and now it's bad luck, and now you're beating yourself up about how unlucky you are. You know, like,
yep,
sure, there's luck involved, but and that's the same thing as where you're coming from when you said, you know, right place, right time. Yeah, but
yep,
you had already been doing it, and so it was a right fit at the right time is almost a better way of saying it, really. I mean,
yep,
if I can put words in your mouth.
For sure. Yeah, you're spot on. And the fishing promotional side of things doesn't sleep. It's not a 9-to-5 job, never will be, never should be. And if that's how someone looks at it, I can promise you those individuals will not reach their potential. I can not only promise you, I can guarantee you that that'll be the case. So if you're not willing to put in the extra time, I mean, if you asked my wife or my family, you know, it's not uncommon that I'm, like you said, in air quotes, working at 9 at night, at 5 in the morning, on a Saturday, on a Sunday, walking away from the dinner table to do something. That's what you need to see, and that's how you need to view it to accomplish where you want to get. And it's been that way forever. I mean, it's endless amount of work, you know, pre-fishing before a guide trip, coming back from a guide trip or a tournament and organizing your tackle or shooting a video or hopping on social media. When you're tired, that's when you got to work the hardest. And that's the same thing with sports or anything. It's the work you put in when you're exhausted that really moves the bar. And that's something that can be said for fishing as well. It's not just hey, I put my time in today, put my feet up, let's smile and have a cocktail. It's no, how can I continue to push the bar? What can I do next? How can I change what I'm doing to be better? Those are things you always have to consider. And it definitely is not for the faint of heart. If you want to make it a hobby, then look at it from one set of glasses. If you want to make it a career, a profession, it's a whole nother level. If you ask any one of these guys that work in the fishing business and truly make strides, they will tell you, it's not an 8-hour-a-day job. It's a time you wake up to the time you go to bed, and that's how you have to look at it. And if you do it that way, you will progress in the industry. I promise you, you
yeah
will.
Yeah, like I said, there's definitely no 9-to-5. I mean, been doing this podcast now for a little over a year and a half, and you know, never thought it'd be so hard just to get people lined up. I mean, the scheduling aspect of it is like, it's crazy because I'm sure this is the same for a lot of industries, but as far as the outdoor industry, especially, you know, on my end, I'm trying to get people in a timely, like I want to get goose hunters in right before the goose season starts, because that's what people are going to want to listen to and they're all fired up about it. But when you go to talk to an expert in that field, they're busy.
Absolutely.
They're busy doing the thing that you want to talk to them about. And it makes for a very interesting challenge to overcome. And I try to be as flexible as I can on my end. Like I do a Waterfall Wednesday with a contest caller, Nick A. Johnson. And I literally take my podcast stuff, and he works a really weird work schedule. And so I go to his house at like 11 o'clock at night, and we record these episodes, and I'm usually in bed by 9:30. Like this is, you know, so I'm like, okay, I got to try to cram in an hour nap here, 'cause I got to go record some episodes with Nick tonight. And you know, wife's just rolling her eyes at me. He's like, you're crazy. I'm like, well, do what you got to do. I mean, it's not, you know, no one's giving me this. I'm going to make it happen. Like this is, It's just not open for debate, you know.
Absolutely. Many, many, many interviews, phone calls, podcasts are done in the truck to and from the lake.
Right.
Because that's your window of time, you know, that you have, or in between guide trips when you're trying to crush down a sandwich and take a breath before you speak. That's not uncommon. I mean, I've done many of that sort of stuff, or after the kids go to bed, you hop back on and go in the garage and shoot a video. And that's just the nature of the beast. And, you know, like I said, you never sleep, and you enjoy it and you smile. And if you don't enjoy it and you're not smiling, then maybe it's not for you.
Right.
And that's okay too. So.
And you can see that you really enjoy it. Like, I really like your Metro Area reports that you put out on Facebook, and your kids get involved now when they do, you know, they like to talk and get right into it. And I think that's great. You know, from a family man myself, it's like, it's very endearing. It's very familiar, I guess. You know, it's something to connect. You know, there's a lot of people out here that have family and are trying to juggle that hobby with family. And, you know, you got your kids right in there doing it. And I think that's great. And,
well, I've learned, because we're gone and busy so much fishing and doing that stuff and promoting, when you're home, you have to find a way to balance it. And that's that. I would say there's a lot of anglers that, I don't want to say fail, but fizzle out, not because of ability or passion. It's because of the family dynamic that they can't juggle it all. So what I've learned, and that comes from my dad, including me and my brother and my sister and everything in his life, was you have to include them. So when I guide every Sunday, so when I get off the water, I usually get home early afternoon every Sunday and I shoot that video. And I always make it a point, because the first thing what happens when you pull in the driveway when you're gone, your kids run up to you. They want to say hi. Did you catch any fish? They want to climb in the boat. They want to talk fishing. They want to talk whatever. So I've learned that instead of just saying, hey, leave me alone, I got to film this video, I've embraced it that where, hey, do this with me. And now they thoroughly look forward to Sunday afternoon because they know we're going to shoot a video. One day it's one kid, the next week it's another kid. One of the kids might be holding the camera or providing baits, and it's kind of become a little bit of a family affair. But that's one thing I've learned, is get the family in as bald as you can, and it makes it easier versus getting home from a long day of guiding and everyone's starving for attention and you have to just tune them out again. It does not sit well on the home front, I promise you that. Yeah, so
I bet not.
So I get them involved, take them fishing whenever I can. I have my, you know, my wife loves to fish. She doesn't get to do as much as she wants, but she'll oftentimes bring the boys to the lake. Hey, I'm guiding till noon. She'll drop them off at 12:15, and I'll take them fishing for 3 more hours and check some spots. Find ways to get them involved and excited about the sport. Then it doesn't become a burden for anybody. Because once it becomes a burden for anybody, that's when you start to hit roadblocks in that promotional career or that fishing career or whatever angle you take. So if you can find a way to get around those obstacles and make it something enjoyable for everyone, hey, you're moving someplace in the right direction.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I was cracking up the last one, and this is just a kid thing in general. I've seen it time and time again, whether somebody's on video or it's just people are socializing at their house, but you got the kid and he's tugging on, he can't wait to talk. He's tugging on your sleeve and you're trying to finish your sentence or your thought. And he's just tugging. And then you finally, okay, well, yeah, well, what do you want to say? And then it's just like deer in the headlights. And then they stumble over their words. They're just so excited. They can't get the words out. I was cracking up.
You got to have composure. I've learned that. I learned that years ago, not just in the fishing side, but the guiding side, even the promotional side. Composure in all aspects of fishing is a vital tool. You know, obviously fishing, the act of fishing, you need to have composure, patience, a clear head. We all know how that works. Tournament fishing, but obviously composure as a fishing guide, you don't know who you're always going to guide. You don't know their mood every day. You've got people coming into your boat that you may not have met in some of these corporate events. And then you look at it from a promotional side. If you've ever worked the Clam Outdoors booth at the St. Paul Ice Fishing and Winter Sports Show, and you don't have composure, it is going to be the longest day of your life, and you might never come back to that show again, because there's 15,000 people that show up on that one day, and your head's got to be on a swivel, you got to breathe, you got to have patience, and you got to have composure. So you know, you're spot on. I mean, yeah, my kids, they're going to tug on your arm all the time. They get excited. And yeah, you want to get your points out there, and you want them to, you know, with all due respect, be quiet for a minute. Come on, man. It never happens. I've learned you just let them talk or it's going to get worse. So you just let them butt in and you let them talk. And usually they get their point across. You can go back to your point and save a lot of headaches. So.
Well, I think you do it as good as anybody. Like I was cracking up. I could just see them bursting with energy, getting ready to talk. I knew exactly how it was going to pan out. 'Cause, I mean, I have kids. And right. I mean, I love working with kids too. I knew how it was going to pan out, but it was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was highly entertaining. Yeah,
no, they all have their own little YouTube channels, and they're doing product reviews, and it's just a hoot, and they love it. One thing we did is we got that this past year we subscribed to like that mystery tackle box, and every month a new set of baits show up, and holy cow, do they get jacked up!
My
and
God.
They take turns on who picks what every month, and someone else goes first every month, and so we're waiting for that to show up here for June, and it's just fun to watch them. I mean, we didn't have that stuff when we were little. We didn't have the tools that we have now. We didn't have the fishing gear that we have now. We didn't have it's the social media, the networking opportunities. I mean, when I wanted to network with my buddies when I was in high school and college, we had to pick up a landline. Or we had to meet someplace. I mean, it was not that easy. I mean, now you have, I can screenshot a spot on Navionics, send it to you right now, and you can be like, perfect. All right, I'll start there tomorrow.
You can send them the pin. Just, not even a screenshot.
It's insane.
You can give them the GPS
None of that
coordinates.
I mean, it used to be spend an hour just trying to find the spot you thought you knew existed.
Yeah.
Now I can go right up to it. With a pop in my hand and a sandwich in the other and you know, put my motor down, push spot lock, casually walk up to the front of the boat, drop a lure and catch a fish. It's just, we're very spoiled. Oh. And I tell my oldest that he's 12 and he's doing the bass tournaments and everything. And he's super obsessed with fishing and he does seminars now. And I tell him, I'm like, you have no idea how good you have it. You have no idea. Like, you know, I used to have to hand auger a hole. Oh. Now you use a drill plate. You have your own Vexilar. You have GPS on your phone. It's just like, you know more. He knows more at the age of 12 than I did when I was 20.
Oh, for sure. I can only.
It's crazy.
Like, it's ridiculous. Like those DNR maps. I mean, that's all we had to go off of. And I remember, I think it was Lake Alexander. No, it was. It was Lake Alexander. And I went out there. And I see them. I look on this map. And there's like this little hump. Sunken Island, we used to call them back in the day. And I'm like, oh, this should be a really good spot. And I didn't see any houses around where it should be. And like, oh, this might be a little secret spot. I go out there and I'm drilling holes. And I think I might have had a hand auger at the time. No, I had at that point, I had a power auger, gas auger. So I went out there and I'm drilling this basin out, trying to. I'm like, man, this thing has got to be around here. And I even had a little handheld Etrex GPS.
Yep.
And so there I like. This map didn't really have, you know, it had, it wasn't very accurate, but it, you know, it had like some grids on it. So I would kind of estimated where it should be in latitude, longitude. And so I started there and I just kind of spiraled out and I'm trying to find this thing. And I'm out there for hours and I can, it's just the same depth everywhere I look. And finally the sun's starting to go down. I'm like, screw it. I'm going to go over to this point that I know exists and I'm going to fish there for the last couple hours of light or whatever. I get out there and I start talking to a fellow fisherman and he's like, oh, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, yeah, I just spent most of my day trying to find that sunken island. I can't find that thing anywhere. He goes, oh, that? Yeah, that doesn't exist. I'm like, what? No. what is it doing on a map? Like, I understand, like, yeah. Not, like, I understand missing it if you're making a map, you know? The cartographer didn't quite find that spot. That's one thing. But you just like, this is a good place for an island. Like, yeah.
The map looked too boring. They had to add something to it.
Exactly. I'm like, this is not the time to get artistic. You just wasted a bunch of my time. Yeah, yeah. We don't have that problem today. But
yeah, no, we're pretty dialed. But no, you're right. You're spot on. It's, you know, we got the, it's definitely a thing where you got to put the effort in and that's on all aspects. And you got to keep challenging yourself and learning. And I always tell people that, I mean, every day you can learn something new is a successful day. You know, don't get complacent. Don't get stuck in a rut. Challenge yourself to try new techniques, to fish new spots. you know, fish new lakes, fish with new people. It's amazing how much we learn from each other. I mean, you know, there, I don't care how good you are as an angler. I don't care who you are. I don't, there's not an angler in this world that won't get shown up by someone else on any day of the week that's fishing. Like, look at Fighter, Seth Fighter, who's arguably one of the best bass anglers in Minnesota. You know, just fished the Denny's yesterday, and he came in 11th with John Feige, who are those two guys together. If you ask me how it's going to end up, I would tell everyone else that signed up, good luck.
Yeah, great.
You know, but it's fishing, you know. And but then tomorrow you go out there and those two guys will crack a 28-pound bag for six and last, you know. And that's just it. And if you ask anyone that's at that level, and if you from a Seth Fighter perspective, the level he's at is the best. That's the most elite level. If you ask any one of those guys, like him or Iaconelli or any of those guys, they're going to tell you there's always somebody every day that can and will beat you. And you should never stop learning. And everyone you fish with, soak up the information. Ask them what they're doing.
Now, we have our first club. We have our first club tournaments coming up this weekend. And so I've been did some pre-fishing last weekend. And about the tournament thing, like, I didn't join a club until I got a decent boat. I got a used Ranger. You know, it's nothing special. Needs to be wet sanded and everything, but it works, right? It gets me out there. It fishes pretty well. I got old ancient electronics, and I need to upgrade this, and I need to upgrade that. But
sure,
I kind of waited to get into the tournament scene until I felt I had a boat that was capable of it. And then I get into this club, and I find out there's a thing called the non-boater. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, I could have been doing this. Does this whole, like, how much knowledge have I just left on the table by not joining this club 15 years ago as a non-boater?
Right.
You know, like, it's because, you know, my boat broke down 1 year, and that's why I fished that most of that season as a non-boater. And yeah, I learned a ton. Learn how well the people fish and think, man, I never would have thought to throw that here or at this time or do that or do this. And it's crazy. But man, Matt, I'll be honest with you. I am my confidence is not at an all-time high right now. I have not been doing well this year. Just my pre-fishing, just fun fishing. Like, I'm catching fish, just not finding the quality I want. And coming into this weekend, well, I'm just like, literally, I was talking to my buddy, my tournament partner for Minnesota Made, Joel. I was just like, oh, dude, I'm not doing good. I'm like really down on myself. Like, I don't feel confident going into these tournaments. Like, I am going to get crushed. And I assume everybody kind of goes to those highs and lows. You just gotta keep grinding. And, you know, I don't know, find that. Do I fish out of my comfort zone? Do I stick to my strengths and hope it finally works? I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Well, it's been a weird year. I mean, look at what we've been dealt in the last 3 weeks for weather. I mean, it's nothing like trial by fire. I mean, if you look at what we've been handed since, let's say, Memorial weekend till now, it's been so – if you're not fishing every day, let's say you go out every 5 days or every weekend – in the last 3-4 weeks, you are going to be so lost because so much changes in a matter of 2-3 days recently.
Seriously.
And now we got the post-spawn funk. I mean, just look at the weights yesterday in the Denny's. I mean, 21 pounds for 6 bass on Lake Minnetonka with the best hammers out there.
Wow.
That's what won it.
Well, that makes you feel a little better.
So, I mean, it was – there just wasn't big weights. It was a grind, and that's just fishing. That's the hand we get dealt at times, and there are things we can control, but there are many things in the sport of fishing we cannot control, and that's how it'll be indefinitely. That's never going to change, and so don't feel ashamed by it. It's, you know, I always tell people, I mean, you're going to have your wins, you're going to have your losses, you're going to have your ups, you're going to have your downs. The peaks and valleys of fishing are rampant, and that's not just open water fishing or tournament fishing. It's everything. It's ice fishing. You go out there and you're like, oh, today's going to be the day, man. Look at the pressure. It's perfect. We got everything we want. And you're just beating your head against the fish house. Oh. And then the next day you're like, oh, I shouldn't be out here. It's not going to happen. And you're just like, you're wondering if there's something wrong, because every time you drop down, you catch a big one. So that's just fishing.
Well, but I'd be okay with that problem.
Right, you and me both. And I always tell people it is how it is. And as a fishing guide, I learned a long time ago, you never talk about yesterday's bite. You never get in a boat with your clients and say, "Well, yesterday was amazing.
We crushed them yesterday."
Or talking to your client about tomorrow's trip. Tomorrow should be good. Today was on fire. You never mention that. That is basically signed your death warrant when you talk about the bite, because it can change every day. It can change from the morning until the afternoon, and for no rhyme or reason. It's just fishing. And yeah, that's kind of how it's been. But this year's been a funky one. I mean, my trolling motor has been on 6, 7, or 8 more in the last 3 weeks than it has in the last 3 months. So it's, you got to move, you got to stay after them. You got to be, thinking one step ahead all the time to get on these fish, because they're just so sporadic right now and they're just on the move. It'll level out. We'll get some summer patterns here super quick, if not here in the next week or two, and you'll find yourself back on pace catching them like you should.
Yeah, I'm waiting for it to stop changing for sure, where they get a little bit more predictable. You know, it's like the lake we fished, it was it's north of Mille Lacs. I think we're fishing Bay Lake.
Yep.
And you can see nice, fresh, clean bed. So they just finished spawning. I didn't see a single fish on the bed, and I wasn't expecting to see anything on the bed. But you could tell they didn't finish that long ago. And I didn't see any bluegill bed, so that didn't start. So they're in that little zone and literally found fish everywhere from a foot of water to 16 feet. You know, it's like they were just spread out everywhere. It's like, man, yep, what in the heck? How am I going to dial these things in, you know? But, yeah, we'll just get after it. And yep, whatever happens, happens. There's not much I can do about it. I'm going to be there. It's not like I'm going to quit or anything, but man, it is definitely frustrating out there.
One thing I learned when the bite gets like fickle like that, you really go two directions. You either power fish and cover as much water as you can trying to get impulse bites, or honestly, if you know of areas there's been fish, I'll slow way down. Like, our best bite for sure the last couple of weeks has been on a wacky rig, no weight, painfully slow dead stick.
It's so painful, because I watched your report on that. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try that. Oh, my God, is that hard to do.
Everyone wants to throw it because the chatterbait was on fire. The bladed jig bait was on fire for 2 weeks. It was, if you weren't throwing one, then you needed to check your pulse. And then it went, like, literally overnight, it went, and we are catching them on, and you can't even tie a wacky rig direct to braid. We're putting four foot, five foot fluorocarbon leaders on, and it's a catch the bait, do nothing. I mean, nothing for like 10 seconds and have confidence and faith that if there's a fish there, they're going to eat it, and they will. And it's been really tough to guide that way because, you know, I think you and myself probably have the discipline to do it because we know what's at the end of the tunnel. But when you get somebody in the boat that doesn't fish much or if at all on a guide trip, you know, I guarantee you after 2.5 seconds, their hands on the handle of the reel.
Oh yeah. If not, you gotta that.
You got to tell them, no, don't touch it. You know, don't touch it. You just pitched your bait into 7 feet of water. The fish is in the bottom 18 inches of the water column. It's going to take that bait 4 seconds to get to them. Don't touch it.
Yep.
And those that listen, you see them bending rods. And so that's been our technique recently, is darn near dead sticking to get these fish to go, at least the big ones. If you want to still catch fish, sure, you can still throw a chatterbait or a swim jig or whatever you want to do and go through them. And sure, you'll pick up a big one maybe here and there, but these bigger fish right now, this post-spawn funk, pre-summer pattern, they're just in the weeds 6 to 10 feet, and you got to really, really coax them out and just put faith that there's fish there. And that's been our by far and away best technique. And it's been great for my kids because I have one son who's 6. He'll be 6 here, and he just throws the bait out, and he just daydreams. You want to know what? He's kicking our butt on how many he's catching. Because he's looking at the bird on the shore. He's talking about this. He's talking about that. Most days he's catching weeds because he's just dragging a bait. Well, not right now. Right now he's catching fish. And you can learn from those, you know, those skill sets and duplicate it on to yourself. So it's been fun. You know, you got to get out there chasing. But you watch, bud. You'll see. I bet you by next week, you know, we're going to be flipping jigs. We're going to be getting after it, and they're going to be towing again pretty quick.
I'm ready. I'm ready for it. So when did you – the UPL, I want to hit – I know you got – we're crunched for time here, but I want to talk to you a little bit about the UPL.
Yeah.
Because even though we haven't even gotten to summer yet, my mind goes to ice fishing all the time, especially since I got into tournament ice fishing. Like, my mind is there at least at some point every single day. So what – from, like, conception to practice, like, how did you get UPL going? Was it just a – like a buddy's friends thing, and or did you always kind of plan for it to be
today? I was always known as kind of a panfish kid. So when I started moderating and working for fishingminnesota.com, this was well before Facebook existed or anything. There were a bunch of fishing forums, and that's how everyone connected, networked, and got information across. You know, I used to moderate the panfish forum back in the day on Fishing Minnesota. And when I was in college, I fished a series called the Leading Edge Tournament Series. It was put on by Fishing Minnesota, where you'd have two-person teams, and you'd weigh a limit of each species. Heaviest weight wins, and this would include bluegills, crappies, bass, pike, walleyes, and a bonus muskie. So there were some big bags. Well, we learned early on that we can win these tournaments by focusing primarily on bluegills and crappies, because while everyone's out trying to catch six bass, we can go catch 20 bluegills and 10 crappies and put more weight in the scale than a limit of walleyes and a limit of bass, especially on lakes like Cass, Lahamadu Chain, the Whitefish Chain. When you're getting to the half-pound bluegills and one-pound crappies, do the math.
Yeah.
It's not hard to bring in 30 pounds of weight. You're not bringing in 30 pounds of weight with bass, pike, or walleye. So we learned quick that the first thing we targeted were our panfish. We'd fill the live well with 20 bluegills and 10 crappies, and then we'd go flipping for bass and chucking spinnerbaits for pike, and we're winning these tournaments. And all these anglers were coming to the scales frustrated by us because they were out all day in 621 rangers trolling for walleyes or chucking musky baits or flipping bass jigs. And here we were coming in with, you know, 25 pounds of panfish. Well, after a couple of years of us doing that, they decided to change the limits on panfish to 10 bluegills and 10 crappies, or Cheaters. 10 bluegills and 5. And I'm thinking, well, why would you do that? We found a way to be proactive. And I thought to myself, well, I'm going to start a panfish tournament. And this was in 2001. And I'm like, I'm going to start a panfish-only tournament, and it's going to be year-round. There was not one that existed at the time where it was a year-round panfish tournament. So the first 2 years of the UPL was actually 4 ice fishing events, 6 open water events, and we'd skip the months of April and November. And we did that for 2 years, and we learned pretty quick that no one wants to compete in a summer panfish tournament. Our numbers were pretty low. So we just kept it, started in 2003, 2004, we just kept it as an ice fishing tournament, and it blew up. The only thing that existed at the time was the trap attacks. The NIFC hadn't started yet. There was no other league that existed other than just like a one-day derby where you had a fish in one hole and win a prize.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And we did that, and then in like 2006, the trap attacks disbanded, and the NIFC came along. And then shortly later, you had other circuits like Team Extreme. And then Gazzoni came out to a UPL and spent a day with us and hung out because Paul and I were buddies from high school. And he started the MMA, the MM Pan started. Now we got all these phenomenal leagues that blossom and surface. So it's been fun. And right now the UPL is the longest running ice fishing circuit in the country because since the trap attacks went away, it's been awesome. And I don't fish in it. I fished in it the first few years, and I actually got kicked out of my own league because I fished so much. I was fishing every day of the week that I would literally just pre-fish for 10 days straight for every single one of the events. And I had some of my closest friends even say, well, if you're going to do this again, we're not doing it. And the ironic thing, Dale, to be honest, if I entered the UPL right now, I'd get my butt whooped. I don't have the ability to pre-fish and stay on top of these bites. These guys and gals are too dang good. I couldn't compete.
That pre-fishing is super important.
These guys would whoop me, you know, so it's funny how times have changed and things have come full circle. And we just continue to progress and make it this, you know, club type learning. It's all about learning. It's all about fun. All the rules are voted on by the league members. The lakes are voted on by the league members. There's a lot of, pre-fishing going on by multiple teams hanging out, grilling out, and that's what we like. It's not intended to be if your utmost purpose of fishing the UPL is to be competitive and win, it's not the place for you. And we've seen some of those teams come and go because they take it too serious. Now, are there really good anglers in the UPL? Yes, you know many of them. Some, I'd argue some of the best ice fishermen out there. But they never lose sight of fun, education, learning, camaraderie, teamwork. It's not about who's better. It's not about who's the best. It's about having fun. And yeah, you're sure darn right, if they win, they're going to be happy about it. But you don't see any of them pout when the tournament's over. They all stick around, ask what worked, what didn't work, and already game plan together on how to combat it the next time they go out. And we've created that atmosphere, and it's fun. So I just run them now. I haven't fished in the UPL since 2005. I just run it every single tournament. I run every tournament. I'm there to be a liaison, to answer questions, to be a shoulder to cry on, whatever. And I just have fun. I bring my kids. I run the weigh-ins. I network with the partners and the sponsors. I go fishing with people that want to come out and hang out. It's not uncommon to have 7-8 trucks follow me around on the ice that day that are just hanging out for the day to learn and watch the weigh-in. And it's become – we look forward to it. We look forward to the 4 UPL events every year, and it's a blast. And the sponsors love it, and no complaints. And so far, our plan and process has worked really well. I don't plan to change it. I've been, you know, every year we have about 40 teams on the waiting list. So we could have a 75 team tournament. I'm confident in that. I just don't want to do that. I don't want to dilute it. And Dave Gentz actually told me years ago, he came to a UPL event probably 10 years back. And he goes, you know what, Matt, this is the closest thing I've ever seen to the trap attacks in terms of camaraderie. He's like, don't change it if you don't want to, because the second you increase the payouts and increase the amount of teams, you can't help but it changing.
It will change,
and it will change the intent of the league. I've held strong since then. I mean, I had someone offer me $18,000 to buy it from me, 18 grand.
Wow.
And my answer was no in about 4 seconds. And
had to think about it for three.
yeah, but that's not the purpose. It's not the intent of the league.
No, so, and I would say that's the thing about Minnesota Made that I love the best too, is just the camaraderie you have and the friendships I've made fishing that for the last 2 years, and the guys that run it, you know, Jake and Giz, salt of the earth, man. I love those dudes.
Yeah,
and
it's not about ego; it's about having fun.
Wouldn't have met them. I mean, there's a little bit of ego in there.
There's a little bit.
I'm not gonna say I'm not competitive, but at the end of the day, it is, you know, it's definitely sharing a beer and having a burger and, like I said, sharing information. You know,
well, you got to look at it. If you win the MN Made, is it really life changing?
No.
If you win the UPL, is it really life changing? No. So do you want to be a schmuck and lose friends over ego? No. Do you want to be a good ambassador and build friendships and have rapport and have people look at you with strong integrity? Yes. And I think UPL, MMA, MN Pan, many of these leagues see it that way. And it's no secret why they're succeeding. It's no secret why Gizzy and Jake are full every year. Same with Ted and Sparky's MN Pan, and same with the UPL, because people see it that way. They see it as a fun way to be involved but have a competitive edge and move forward. And I applaud these type of circuits that are out there, and they're doing great things for the sport.
Yeah, it's the ice fishing, the competitive ice fishing is just it's kind of blown up. And Minnesota Made had those growing pains too, where they're like, they had there was definitely the want out there for them to have more teams, and you know, Jake and Giz were just like, no, we're capping it at 30. We just don't want it to get out of control. And I think 30 is a good number. I mean, that's a lot of guys out there, and you got to look at the resource, you know.
Absolutely.
You got 30 teams out there that are good sticks that are gonna take some fish out of that lake that day,
right?
You know, and that's a lot of fish when you do the math, you know, and biggest
exploiting
ones.
Bites. Yeah, exploiting bites and that sort of stuff. No, you're absolutely spot on. It's fun to watch some of these leagues grow and prosper and expand, And you just got to be mindful, and you got to have, like we talked about earlier, composure, and stick with the guns. And but I also like to make it open for people to be involved and show up to the weigh-ins and see what's going on and give back and clean the lake when we're done. And it's a good time, no doubt.
It is awesome. But that competitive nature and getting down on yourself and not, you know, staying positive, I mean, that's a huge part of it during the event. You know, we didn't have on Clearwater last year, Joel and I didn't have a full limit. You know, we were freaking out. We were three crappies shy, and we had like an hour and a half left to go, and just like, man, we're just getting our butts stomped today. Like, you know, you're not expecting to catch a crappie at 1:30 in the afternoon, not on this lake, you know. And we just kept grinding out, and we're like, well, let's go back. We know there's fish in this one spot. We'd caught walleyes there. The bluegills are there. Rock bass are there. I mean, it's just a matter of time. And the crappies have to be using that same seam, so we go back over there, and we made the right move at the right time. You know, it's kind of like we talked about earlier, being in the right place at the right time, or setting yourself up to be lucky, because boom, all of a sudden I hook another nice crappie, and that just reinvigorated me. I'm like, oh, they're here. There ain't just one. Let's fish hard, you know. And Joel caught another one, and then he caught a little 8.5 inches that he almost didn't keep. And he's like, ooh, I better check this one, because they need, for Minnesota May, they have to be 8 inches. And he checked it, 8.5. That gave us our limit. That gave us that bonus fish. That one 8.5, that's the biggest 8.5-inch crappie anybody's ever caught.
Yeah.
That 8.5 crappie
equaled two fish.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, and then we ended up winning that event. It's like, I'll tell you, you can get in that plaque, you know, the check didn't, that was like nothing. You know, you spend way more than that on gas and tackle and rooms and meals and everything else, but getting that plaque, man, did that feel good.
Well, and I love watching anglers grow. I mean, I've seen some of the anglers start in the MN Made or start in the UPL or MN Pan or whatever it might be, and when they first start, it's intimidating. They struggle. They learn that they are not using the right gear. They don't know as much as they thought they did, respectfully.
No,
and then you watch them after a couple of years. Yeah, then you watch them after a couple of years in the league. All of a sudden, it's like, these are – I mean, I look at some of the guys in the UPL. When they first started in the UPL, with all due respect to them, they were not great at panfish anglers. They thought they were because they had their home lake bite. They knew where to go when the sun went down. Well, they come out and fish, and they go, holy cow, this is a whole different thing. Now, after a few years, some of them are winning events. Their dial. It's so fun. I think that's one of the most fun things about these leagues is watching some of them grow. I mean, I remember Dizzy, the first time we went fishing, he came to the UPL. He was dragging a 2-person, 180-pound fish house onto the ice.
Oof-ta.
And now he's one of the better ice fishing panfish anglers in the metro. He's dialed. Like, he understands.
He's all right.
He studies the sport, and he can compete against with the best, right? So, and that's so cool to watch those kind of stories, and that's really why we're doing what we're doing, is to build those stories, build those memories, make other ambassadors for the sport, whether they do it as a career or not, whether they just have influence in their cul-de-sac. Those are the success stories that this industry is built off of. And to me, that's a big part of why I do what I do. And I love it every day.
I agree. I like watching the other anglers get better, you know, right around me. And I like watching myself get better. I mean, it's like, I know there's a ton of stuff I have yet to learn, like tight lining. I've never tight lined before. And there's guys that are, you know, you hear it from a lot of these upper echelon guys are like, well, you better learn, you know. It's like, well, then I'd better learn, because I, you know, that's where I want to be someday. So it's all soaking it up, but we're getting close to your time, Matt. I really appreciate you carving out part of your busy day and doing this. I didn't get to talk to you much when we did our little Minnesota Made walkthrough at Clam, because you were busy talking with the other 30 teams. So, but I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you around, seeing you at the shows, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
You got it, brother. You know I'll be there. Looking forward to seeing you again as well.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Dale.
Bye. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the Full Scale Outdoors podcast. I appreciate each and every one of you guys. It's and gals. It's an amazing ride. We're gonna keep forging ahead. So remember, thebeardstruggle.com for some great beard products. I'll keep that one nice and short. Full Scale 15 will give you 15% off of your total order. So yeah, there you go. All right, that's it for this week. Thanks, everybody. Once again, appreciate the heck out of all of you. Whatever your passion, pursue that. Full Scale.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.